Welcome to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And Cindy, what was your favorite children's book?
Heidi.
For me, it was all the Tolkien books.
Oh, definitely.
And in one of the books, the only, you know, in The Hobbit, there's all the different sort of like food scenes and the great wheel of cheese that he has and trying to feed the dwarves and all that sort of business. Mm. But one of the hobbits in the Fellowship of the Ring, one of the hobbits tells the great story of getting great trouble for picking mushrooms.
Mm-hmm.
For picking all the mushrooms.
When they were kids, yeah.
And when they come home at the very end of things, you know, it's that basket of the smell of the mushrooms coming in the house. That's what, you know, his childhood, like, great food memory is that thing, you know. And people that love mushrooms have an unreasonable affection for mushrooms, right?
I think so.
And some of the more unusual people that we've met over the years in and around food have been mushroom foragers.
Right.
And it was funny, but not long ago, and one of the bistros, walking and talking to clients, and we, you know, you open the pot of mushrooms for the clients, and this one man laid his hands against his face like a little child, you know, like, oh my God.
They are sort of magical, and I think that's what you're getting at.
Tolkien's books are magical,
and mushrooms are magical, and some of them are even shaped in a magical sort of way, which would be the morel. So yes, they are.
But when they come into the kitchens, they're almost like right out of the storybooks, and they're not cheap.
No, they're not.
And people are not always effective at getting flavor out of them. So let's put all the magic on the shelf for a minute.
Okay.
And maybe talk us
through. Nitty gritty.
Yeah, talk us through how to get the magic out of the mushrooms.
Mushrooms are 80-90% water. They actually, as they grow underground, they kind of, with water, push themselves up above ground. And, of course, release some of their spores so that they can replicate and reproduce. And so when you have something that has such a high water content, you have to remove some of it because water tastes like water. And you want mushrooms actually are very, very flavorful, almost to the point of being meaty in taste. And I think that's one of the reasons why they can really stand alone as a dish. And they have that inherent because they do grow in, you know, either attached, they're either going to grow attached to something that's dead, something that's living, or they grow in the root system of trees. So it's sort of three sort of choices for the way that mushrooms grow. And, you know, being attached to, say, a forest floor, you know, it's the mushroom is the definition of what is earthy, you know, in flavor and smell and on your palate. So to really work with mushrooms, you have to cook them slowly and for a long period of time, depending on the mushroom.
And so let the building blocks of, okay, so you bought, let's pick mushrooms at the, you've gone to market and you bought morel mushrooms.
Mm-hmm.
And you've gotten home with your bag of morel mushrooms. What is the first step? What do you need to do with those morels?
One of the things you have to decide is, how are you going to wash them? And if so, how are you going to get that done? Because it's very, very, they, while they're not sponges, they act like sponges.
Because there are people who will soak them and they will get filled up with water.
Yeah, that would be terrible.
And there are people who will just sort of lightly brush them.
Well, you can do that.
But you have to be pretty darn good at it.
Well, the question is it a foraged mushroom? Is it coming from the forest floor? Or is it a cultivated mushroom? A cultivated mushroom, you can hopefully they're just super clean and beautiful and really, really fresh. I mean, any mushroom you get, you want them to be as fresh as possible. They begin to deteriorate quickly, and you really do need to store them in a cold environment with some sort of paper around them in a dark environment, because that's how they live anyway. And because you kind of want that water, that natural water that they have to wick away from them rather than for them to sit in it. So that's one of the reasons why we store them in paper or some sort of absorbent paper. So in the idea of washing them, you're going to put them in cold water, never warm water, but cold water, and just kind of swish them through a large amount of water as quickly as possible in small batches and let them drain immediately.
Because morels have all those little sort of holes
pockets
where you can catch pine needles and pieces of insects
and that's the other
dirt and
exactly,
bark
and bugs. So one of the things about a morel mushroom is it's awfully tempting to split them in half because, I mean, I know, you know, we love to stuff morels. We love to see the beauty of the whole morel mushroom that does sort of...
They're all variable in size, too. So the bigger ones, you almost want... to get any kind of even cooking, you'd have to split them in half.
Yeah,
right?
But there can be all kinds of things in the center of a morel mushroom. So yeah. you do really want to consider maybe even we don't always, but cutting them in half. And if I was cooking them at home, I probably and wasn't used to working with them and didn't know what to necessarily look for, I would. But they're definitely going to have pine needles and all these things in. So you're just swishing them through the water, draining them quickly, and then as you begin to cook them, again as always, I'm going to suggest a stainless steel pan, a wide surface pan, so it's a sauté pan. And you never want to overload your pan because it brings down the temperature of the pan too quickly. And I like to cook mushrooms in
butter.
So that
means you need a pan that is much larger than is required to just hold the quantity of,
right,
of mushrooms.
Or you do it in batches, one way or the other. And it just takes longer if you do it in batches, that's all. Or multiple pans, depending on how big your stove is. That's up, you know, that's what depends on your situation. But, you know, I like to cook them in butter because I like the flavor of butter. You could cook them in canola oil or whole, corn oil.
Whole or butter, clarified butter.
Whole butter. Whole butter. And as they cook, you will see all the water begin to rise, and you'll see it coming out of the mushroom, especially with a button mushroom, the most simple of all the mushrooms, pretty much the least expensive of all the mushrooms, and of course a cultivated mushroom.
At what temperature, if you're cooking them in the butter, at what temperature?
Medium. I would say about medium heat.
Enough to get a sizzle, not so much to get things to brown fast, right?
I really do think it's an important, I was reading a couple of different McGee and a couple of other things yesterday just to kind of brush up and just see. And this, I don't know, you know, the scientific aspect of something. I cook with my heart and my head and my hands and my eyes and, you know, my palate. And so to understand completely the scientific aspect of it, there are things that need to caramelize and things that need to happen to really recognize the full flavor of the mushroom. And that happens by cooking it slowly on low heat, not too slow, medium heat. Great. Perfect. Just be patient.
You know it's too high if it's starting to brown in any significant way.
Yeah, yeah, and browning too quickly. If you're browning before your mushroom is cooked, you're working too high of heat.
And you know it's too low if it's not even kind of moving, bubbling,
right,
sizzling, right?
Right, and I can tell you it takes us about 20 minutes to saute our quartered small button mushrooms. So it's 18 to 20 minutes, and that's with a lot of care. And
and you're only doing really two things. You're getting water out and caramelizing some of the actual material a bit at the
end. And also, we tend to not salt them until closer to the end. And, you know, I think this one thing that you do, this taking the time to do it and really paying attention to the mushroom and cooking them all evenly and allowing the water to come out and allowing them to caramelize really allows for this brilliant flavor in this thing that came out of the forest floor. It's or was cultivated.
And you're not after something that's like fried and crispy. You're not after something Mm-mm. that's soft and spongy either. You're after something that's sort of firm and has a little bit of a crunchy texture, but it's still delicate on the interior, right?
That's right. That's right. There are about 1,000 different varieties of mushrooms, and only about a few dozen of them they've figured out how to cultivate them. So it does really make it a special thing. You know, we think of morels as coming in the springtime. And while the springtime and the fall are obviously the big time for wild mushrooms or forage mushrooms, forest floor mushrooms, you know, in the fall tends to be the biggest producing time of the year. And but morels really do, you know, and they're actually mushrooms almost all the time at different times of the season throughout the country, throughout America. Something will be growing because, you know, it's going to be warmer here or whatever. And it's just, it's such an amazing thing if you can figure out how to forage for them.
Morels and asparagus come at about the same time usually every year, and that's always one of the nice. It's an electric moment
and
of,
it's such a
of
great
spring
combination.
For food.
I mean, the two together are beautiful together.
Well, the one is maybe the strongest vegetable flavor, and the other is this sort of primordial, you know, forest earth aroma. That's definitely, you know, if you just blanch the asparagus and have it warm, and you have timed out correctly so that your mushrooms. If your mushrooms are just done and perfect in the pan, mm-hmm. at the time when you drop your asparagus, pull that out, and dry it. It goes on the plate, and those mushrooms just serve the mushrooms over it. Finish the mushrooms last minute, maybe, with a bit of fresh shallot to caramelize in the pan with it, and a nice sized piece of fresh thyme. Toss around a little bit, pull the thyme out of that pan, because you don't want to eat that.
Right.
But just to give a little extra perfume to the mushrooms and heighten their woodsiness. And serve those things together. It's fantastic.
Yeah, mushrooms love thyme.
So morel's beautiful coming in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
your other favorite mushrooms to work with, to eat? You mentioned button mushrooms as being economical,
mm-hmm.
and it's a talented cook that gets flavor from those. There's certainly others that are much more expensive, like truffles,
right?
That only get in the wintertime, really.
Well, I love porcinis and chanterelles. Those are probably my two favorite, and I have really grown to enjoy the flavor of oyster mushrooms, which is another cultivated mushroom. So oyster mushrooms are not that expensive. Again, when you're working with them, they have a much lower water content than a button mushroom, so it doesn't take as long to cook them to get them to caramelize and get to a good flavor profile. So that's kind of nice with oyster mushrooms. But porcinis are so, again, you know, you sort of talk about something magical or you know, in shape, and it looks like something out of a dwarf book. For sure. Porcinis really do taste like meat. I mean, that's the meatiest, to me, can be very strong. If they're old at all, they have a very, very strong flavor. So you really, really want to find porcinis when they're very fresh. And, you know, they do sometimes have worms in them. So you need to look for those two things. You'll see that the stem is white, white to light brown. The cap should be tight. The cap should be solid, not soft or fleshy. And you want to look at the gills as well.
When you look under that mushroom, if the gills are bright and tightly attached,
mm-hmm.
that tells you sort of how fresh that is going to be.
And smell them. I would smell any mushroom I was buying.
Porcinis are probably my single favorite non-meat thing to cook on a wood-burning grill.
Oh, so good. They're so
because
good.
They take the smoke and they act like meat.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
Mushrooms that people often see in the grocery store, portobello mushrooms, cremini mushrooms, are these, you know, I hate to say wild mushrooms because they were once upon a time called wild mushrooms.
Mm-hmm.
I always think of forest or foraged versus cultivated.
Right.
Portobellos and creminis
are cultivated for sure. And actually, cremini, the only difference between the cremini and the portobello is age. So I think it's about 5 days or so that they allow them to grow longer, the portobello, so they just get to be bigger and they have a lot of flavor. That's the beauty in the portobello. I love creminis too, but the portobello is, again, one of those kind of steaky, you know, you could put rosemary with portobellos. I mean, they could stand up to that. But again, those are probably one of the few mushrooms that you would want to remove the gills. Portobellos are not, the gills are not so desirable.
Not
they tend
yeah.
to get a little slimy. That's pretty much the right word when you cook them. So
slimy is one of the worst food
yeah,
words.
Yeah, that's
isn't
a bad
it?
Word.
We have to do a program on what all the words are you should never use to describe food. Slimy is on that
but
list.
Portobellos are very good mushrooms. And yeah, they should be pretty red. And shiitakes, you know, that inherent nuttiness of shiitake mushrooms is so pretty. I love shiitake mushrooms with lentils.
When we get back to our next segment, I'm going to hit you up for a bunch of recipes on different types of mushrooms and all that and more, and wines for mushroom dishes on Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine.